Welcome to our blab. Now, I'm talking to Christine Bailey, one of the UK's leading nutritionists and chefs. And the reason why we're doing this blab, actually, is because Christine is appearing at the Allergy Show in Liverpool at the weekend, and we'll be giving some cookery demonstrations. And we thought that we'd talk about the nutritional consequences of being a celiac. Quite topical. I know a lot of celiacs. In fact, my niece is a celiac. Know lots of people who are on the residence network who are gluten intolerant and that type of thing. So I think that this actually could reach a lot of people. Now, Christine, what are the nutritional consequences of being a celiac? And before we do that, what is a celiac and what is that disorder?
Yeah, it's a very good question. Well, first of all, it's worth me pointing out that I'm actually celiac myself. So I have another reason for wanting to do this. And I see a lot of celiacs and people with non-celiac gluten sensitivity in my clinic. It's one of my special areas. Now, celiac disease, just very briefly, it's an autoimmune condition. It is not an allergy to gluten. It's an autoimmune condition. Now, what I mean by that is that when someone who has celiac disease eats gluten, the gluten will start to attack the little villi, which are little projections in your small intestine. And it attacks those, destroys them, and they are absolutely vital for our absorption of key nutrients. So imagine, if you would, a sort of shag carpet, you know, really fluffy, really thick. That's what our villi look like.
They're at, nice at microscopic level, yeah?
Yeah, at a microscopic level. Now, imagine a hard wooden floor. When you have celiac disease and you are still eating gluten, it hasn't been diagnosed, those villi are almost transformed, completely flattened in the most severe cases to something that looks like a hard floor. You cannot digest and absorb those key nutrients, which means that normally at the time of diagnosis, you are actually quite low in key nutrients. And until those villi start to recover, and they will, as you take gluten out, and remember, if you're celiac, it's gluten out for life. You can't just have a little bit now and then, you have to get it out for life. And then when you've taken gluten out, gradually over time, those villi will recover and you will start to absorb more nutrients. But you know what? The research now suggests it can take years for that to happen. It doesn't happen overnight. It takes years. And for some people, it never completely happens, which means that you may always need to watch certain nutrients. And that's what we want to talk about today.
Okay. And before we just go into that, gluten is in so many things. One of my other clients is a fish and chip shop, and twice a month he does a gluten-free day.
Right.
He said to us when we were doing an event there, a kind of demonstration event, it was actually on Celiac Awareness Day last year, and they got this one of his suppliers in, and it's even in vinegar.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is one of the problems with eating out, and I mentioned to you you know, recently I've been involved in the Free From Awards. I'm one of the judges. And so we go out and we have to sample various restaurant menus. And, you know, if you are really serious as a caterer in terms of catering for people gluten-free, you have to do an awful lot of checks. You have to do clean downs. You have to have separate fryers, separate chopping boards, separate toasters. You have to take this seriously, because even a minute amount of gluten will damage a celiac. There's no question about that at all.
Okay. Now, I don't want to get too gory, but I mean, I already know these consequences, but for the purpose of the people who are watching this live now and the replays afterwards, what are the sort of physical consequences? So yeah. I'm a celiac. I'm hypersensitive to anything gluten.
Yeah.
I eat something with gluten in it. What's going to happen to me?
Yeah. So for some people, they may not have any symptoms, except that they will be malabsorbing and they may feel, do you know what? I'm exhausted all the time. My energy level is really low. I can't get out of bed. And that's because they are anemic. They are iron deficient because they are malabsorbing. For other people, even a small amount of gluten and they'll keel over. They'll have chronic abdominal pains, digestive spasms. They may even have to go to hospital. Some people will have rashes developing. Something called dermatitis herpetiformis is very much linked to gluten and celiac disease. So they may have rashes all over them. Other people will have migraines, foggy headedness, depression, mental health problems. I have one client, whenever she had a little bit of gluten, she'd have an epileptic fit.
Oh, wow.
So it can affect all body systems. Unfortunately, what happens in the gut does not stay in the gut in your body with gluten. It can affect any body system at all. Now, long term, if you carry on eating gluten, and this may be because you haven't actually been diagnosed yet, and you think gluten is a problem, but you know you haven't been diagnosed and you carry on eating gluten, one of the long-term consequences is osteoporosis, which is a bone disorder where your bone mass density starts to diminish. And this is probably the most common associated problem that celiacs will have, even if they've taken gluten out their diet. And osteoporosis is, you know, can often lead to fractures and really is preventable if we get the right nutrients. And the studies have shown that some of the key nutrients, and I've just written a blog about the key nutrients to focus on, but the key nutrients are B vitamins, and we'll talk about these in a minute, iron, antioxidants, calcium, vitamin D and magnesium. And of course, those later ones I've just mentioned are key for your bones.
Right. Okay. Now, obviously, if you discover you're celiac or gluten intolerant in some way, you decide you're going to address the issue and try and cut those things out. Going back to the original question.
Yeah.
The nutritional consequences, because you're going to have to supplement some of those things in one way or another.
Yeah.
Let's get on to that.
Yeah. So normally you will be diagnosed through your GP.
Right.
Or gastroenterologist, and that normally the first thing they will do, or they should do, is test your vitamin D level and your iron, ferritin, serum iron. Why? Because those ones are often very low and are easily preventable with good supplementation. So your doctor may well prescribe you with an iron supplement. Often, if you can go for a liquid iron, it's often better absorbed and more easily tolerated. Some iron supplements can make you very constipated, so just be careful which one you select. Vitamin D. If you cannot get your doctor to test you, you can do a home spot test, little skin prick. You can get those via my website. You need to make sure, particularly in the winter months, that your level is optimal, and I mean sort of 80 to 100. Vitamin D, I'm sure most listeners will know, really we get it from sunlight. We get it by exposing our skin to sunlight, and we make vitamin D that way. There are a few food sources of vitamin D, particularly oily fish, liver, cod liver oil. And that's why, you know, when we were young, we were given cod liver oil. There was a reason for that. Yes, it contains the omegas, but also it's high in vitamin D and vitamin A, both of those needed for the gut. You can get a little bit in shiitake mushrooms and other mushrooms, but quite frankly, it's, you know, dark most of the time now. We are not going to be exposing ourselves. Most people will probably need to take a supplement of vitamin D.
Right.
So those are often the ones the doctors will test. Doesn't mean that the other ones aren't important. You may need to go to a practitioner such as myself who specializes in functional nutrition and lab testing to really get a complete nutritional screen so you know what you need.
Okay. Now, in terms of vitamin D,
So
you're very fair-skinned and I'm dark-skinned or olive-skinned. Does that have a bearing on the amount of...
Right. It does. And that's a very good point. So if you're my colouring, sort of ginger or fair, and you've got fair skin, then actually we don't need quite as much sun exposure to get the vitamin D. The darker your skin, the more you are probably going to be deficient because you really need to spend a lot of time in the sun. Great if you're planning for a winter holiday in the sun, but a lot of people will be stuck in offices and not getting out. And even if you say, I see a lot of sports athletes and they say, it's fine, I exercise outside. Do you know what? I've tested all my clients. They're all low in the winter. Even if you are going out for a run, it's not enough. You need bright sunlight for about 20, 30 minutes a day to get enough. So vitamin D is one of those ones where, unfortunately, there's not a lot of good food sources. Yes, if you're eating a lot of liver or oily fish, but even then you probably won't get enough. Right. Let's talk about some of the other nutrients that are often low in celiacs. And this is, do you know what? This is partly because they're malabsorbing and it takes a while for that absorption to get better once they've taken gluten out. But it's also because if you are celiac, often you will rely, unfortunately, on gluten-free processed foods.
Right.
And I'm going to be really honest, a lot of them are not that nutritious. So they often lack some of the key nutrients like B vitamins, magnesium, which are often found in other gluten-free grains. And they are often quite high in sugar and low in fiber. And if you rely on those to fill up when you were eating the glutinous products, you are likely to remain low. What you need to do is really focus on natural, non-gluten foods, you know, foods that are naturally gluten-free, but highly nutritious. So B vitamins, leafy green vegetables. I'm always saying leafy green vegetables, aren't I? You know, kale, Swiss chard.
I love all that stuff, by the way.
Good. Broccoli, cauliflower, and yep. This time of year, Brussels sprouts. Do you know what? These are fantastic sources of B vitamins. Seeds, sunflower seeds in particular, really good source of B6, which is really important for energy production and our nervous system. Folate, asparagus, avocado, you know, these are important foods, and they're naturally gluten-free. So you don't have to resort to prepared fortified products. We can get them, but it does take a little bit more of a focus to make sure, am I getting the right range of foods in my diet? B12, though, is one that vegans do need to be careful of. B12 is often low in celiacs. B12 is naturally found in meat, fish, eggs. And yes, it is found in fortified products, but it's very difficult to get it in vegan and raw products. Spirulina will contain some, but just a word of warning, I have seen a lot of vegans and raw fooders, and they are still often low in B12. B12 is vital for your nervous system. It's vital for brain health and controlling homocysteine in the body. Homocysteine, when it gets high, is linked to heart disease and dementia. So B12, really make sure you focus on getting enough. You can get some fortified products if you are a celiac and vegan, but remember, yeast extract, as in Marmite, is not suitable on a gluten-free diet. It contains gluten. And that can often be a stumbling block because people don't realize. And the reason is it's made from fermenting on barley, and barley is a gluten containing product.
Okay. Now, just going back to the green stuff, not everybody wants. Yeah, I do too. And I even like the raw. I even like it raw.
Mm.
But a lot of people don't.
Mm.
You know, let's talk about just for briefly about how much to cook this stuff.
Yeah.
Because my daughter, for instance, we've just got her into broccoli. It's been a huge battle.
Wonderful.
To get her into broccoli. And how we did it was by overcooking it, and so it was really soft. But what we started to is gradually you know, make it firmer for her.
Yeah.
And she's not noticing, because I think that sometimes these things are an acquired taste.
Yeah, they are. Well, funnily enough, when I do, because you know I do a lot of hands-on cookery days for children.
Yeah.
When I do those days, we always include something with leafy greens in. Now, right. That might be a green smoothie. And that you can make those really tasty. My new book that's coming out has got loads of those in. You can even make chocolate, healthy chocolate smoothies with greens in, and they won't even know it's there.
Wow.
Soups are brilliant. Kale crisps are a really good option for kids in particular. But one of the ways that we often will often encourage children is obviously one, to get them to do it themselves. But some children will actually prefer things raw, as in crunchy, than mashed up. But you can just experiment. Now, when you cook vegetables, what often will happen is the amount of antioxidants, vitamin C, and the B vitamins will diminish. They are water-soluble vitamins. The more you cook something, the more those will decrease. Other nutrients will still be in there. So, you know, I always say to people, get them in your diet. Whatever you can do, get them in your diet. And then if you can include some raw as well as cooked, great. And obviously minimum blanching or steaming is possible. Just a little tip here, though, because some celiacs will also suffer from another autoimmune disease called Hashimoto's, which is a thyroid condition. And there is a little bit of a concern that if someone with a thyroid condition eats a lot of cruciferous vegetables raw, they can influence the thyroid function.
Can we, sorry, let me stop you. Cruciferous, what is that?
Sorry, yeah. So things like what you just said, broccoli, kale, right, watercress, right, the greens, really. Yep. And it's because these vegetables contain goitrogens, and these goitrogens can, in some people, interfere with thyroid function, but only one if they're raw and you eat vast quantities, and if that person doesn't have enough iodine in their body. So there are cases where for some people, they need to make sure that they have other nutrients in their body. I mean, see a practitioner who knows about these things, who can really advise you. But there are a few people where they need to be a little bit careful how much raw greens they include.
Okay. Now, I have a Nutribullet.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. I have got one. Yeah. Love
right.
it.
I have a Nutribullet. I love it too. Would you say that's a great way of getting in the raw stuff?
Perfect. And I'm not sponsored by them at all. I love my Nutribullet. And you know what? When we went to the States this year, I took it in my suitcase because I thought, you know what? If there is nothing I can eat, I can make up a quick protein shake, grab a load of veg and fruit and blend it up. They're great for children because they're quite robust little gadgets, and it's very hard to break them.
But it's also very easy for kids, getting back to the kids' point, to sort of mask those things. Yeah. They don't even know it's there. You can make them in the most amazing colors
exactly,
as well.
Exactly. And the other thing is that, you know, this time of year, if you're thinking, well, the amount of fruit is a bit more limited, just get bags of frozen berries. You know, it's cheap, it's healthy, it's economical, and just chuck a handful with a handful of spinach or kale in and blend. You know, you can add nuts and other things if you want, but you can make it simple.
Leslie in the audience is saying that she adds coconut oil.
Yeah, I mean, coconut oil is fabulous, and it's great as a medium chain triglyceride, which is great for energy burning. And it also makes it quite creamy, which is fantastic. Just going back to the other nutrients, and obviously I have put this on my blog, but the other key nutrients that some celiacs will struggle with is calcium and magnesium, which is really important for bone health. And there's another reason for that, and that is that a lot of celiacs, when they're first diagnosed, those little villi I mentioned, your shag carpet, are damaged, and that's actually where we digest lactase or lactose from milk sugar. We produce lactase, and that helps us to digest dairy products that contain the milk sugar. So if they're damaged, it often means that celiacs really struggle with dairy. So you need, and often, you know, in our sort of culture, Western culture, we think one, dairy is healthy, and two, that that's the only source of calcium. Both are wrong. Calcium actually is better absorbed when you have other nutrients with it, like vitamin D and magnesium. So again, we're going back to our green leafy veg. They're a really good source of calcium and magnesium, but also things like the pumpkin seeds, any seeds actually, but pumpkin tahini, which is sesame seed paste, you know, that you add to hummus. Really good source of calcium. Tofu's another good source. You can get even oranges. Do you know what? Oranges are actually a good source of calcium. But also things like tinned sardines and mackerel. So there's lots of non-dairy foods that you could use instead to get your calcium and magnesium.
Can we just address the dairy stuff? Yeah. Now, I love milk, but I know it's not really that great for me. Mm. Can we talk about some supplements?
Yeah.
You introduced me to the coconut yogurt, which I absolutely love.
Yeah.
But can you talk us through some of the other ones? Because there's soya milk. I mean, what are your views on that?
Yeah, so there are so if you are someone who, you know, likes to have milk and knows that actually can't really cope with that in my cereal or porridge or drinks, then I generally recommend either coconut or almond milk. And there's a reason for that. One, they are very nutritious. They tend to be lower in allergy responses. One of the problems with some of the other sort of milk alternatives, there is a little bit of a concern about rice milk at the moment, particularly for young children, being high in arsenic. And soya can be a very big allergen for a lot of people. And again, you know, because it contains phytoestrogens, for some people it may not necessarily be appropriate. There is also a concern, depending on where you get it, that it's actually from GM-modified soya. Right. So I tend to go for almond or coconut.
I've never tried coconut. I have tried almond. It had a bit of an aftertaste, and I wasn't.
Yeah, I mean, you can get others. You can get hemp milk and things like that, but it might be worth just trying a few different brands.
Yeah, and maybe it's an acquired taste. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I use it a lot. I mean, you can make any nut milk yourself. You could just soak any nut. So cashew, almond, pistachio, Brazil's very good. You can soak them in water overnight, strain it, and then blend it up in a Nutribullet or Vitamix with some other from fresh water, and then just strain it and make your own. You know, if you want to, and that way you avoid all the additives and sugar that a lot of the commercial brands will have as well.
Okay. Now, I'm seeing it a lot. Now we're talking about these milks and stuff. I see a lot and read a lot lately about coconut water.
Yeah. So coconut water, quite different because it's obviously not from the coconut meat. But coconut water, I mean, a lot of my athletes use. Now, coconut water is really rich in electrolytes. Now, what I mean by electrolytes is calcium, potassium, sodium, magnesium. When we work out, we sweat. And we sweat all of those out. Everyone thinks it's just sodium. It's not. We sweat them all out. And if you suffer with cramping or low energy, particularly after exercise, it may be that you're low in some of these electrolytes. And coconut water is a really easy way of refreshing the body. Again, try and choose an unsweetened one that doesn't have all the fruits in. You know, and it's a really good way of quickly replenishing yourself. So if you're someone that it's just going, you know, a bit low in energy, or like we've mentioned before, Paul, you really can't stand just drinking water, then a glass of coconut water may be useful. Don't drink the whole liter carton, because it does contain sugar, natural sugars. So just watch how much you are actually consuming.
And does it quench your thirst?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Right. Yeah. Right. And places like Whole Foods, Planet Organic, they actually sell now the young Thai coconuts, and you can literally just stick a straw in and drink it yourself, you know. So, and that's really fresh, you know, and incredibly hydrating.
Okay. Now, we're going to wrap this up in a minute. Was there anything else you wanted to add from a nutrition point of view?
Yeah, so it is worth mentioning that we do know that some celiacs will struggle healing the gut. So you're normally told, you know, oh, within 6 months, you'll be absolutely fine. You'll be absorbing, you'll be digesting, you'll be back to normal. Actually, the studies don't say that. The research suggests that you can still, after a year, 2 years, still be low in a lot of nutrients. So first thing, get yourself checked, get a full nutritional screen, get yourself checked, and then focus on healing that gut. There are lots of key nutrients that are needed to heal the gut. Things like glutamine, collagen, probiotics, vitamin D, vitamin A. A lot of that information is on my website, so you can have a look at that. And those are sort of things that I'll be talking about at the weekend at the allergy show as well.
Wonderful. Now, there's another event. You kind of touched on it earlier. A free prom day for kids, yeah. which actually, I live in Surrey. It's not too far from.
No,
from
not at all.
Wokingham. Can you just talk us through that event?
Yeah. So, you know, I am passionate about really instilling healthy eating in children. I mean, that's one of my passions. I'm a trained teacher. I'm a trained chef. So what we do is we run hands-on cookery days for children. They come with a range of ingredients that I will give them details of with a parent, and they will have their own kitchen bay, and they will learn to cook healthy, low-sugar treats and bakes, and sometimes we do three-course meals, and they learn skills, they learn about healthy eating, and they get to have fun, and then they eat the food. So we've just announced the next date, which is the 6th of February. Places are very limited. We only allow 9 children in because I want to spend time with them, and we want them to have their whole bay and their whole area so they can cook. They all get goodie bags from various free food companies as well. It's a fun day. So all the details will be on my website.
Wonderful. Now, before we wrap this up, we have actually had a question from a member of the audience, which perhaps you could answer.
Yeah.
And it comes from James Hurd, although Leslie's helped us get that up on the screen. So thanks for that, Leslie. Now, James is an athlete.
Oh, great.
I know James personally. He's a great guy. He's an athlete. He has a touch rugby, if I remember right.
Brilliant.
And his question is, I've heard water is better absorbed when mixed with squash as opposed to straight water. Is this true?
Well, James, if you're referring to post-exercise, then quite frankly, you probably will need some carbohydrate to really help with replenishing your glycogen. But it's not the water that will be better absorbed. But when you drink a drink after exercise, to enable you to get the most benefit, then we normally recommend some protein, electrolytes and carbs. So I'm not a big fan of squash. It doesn't really contain any nutritional value. I would rather you use something like coconut water and then added a protein powder, or you just make a smoothie and add a banana. I mean, this is interestingly that the studies have shown that a milkshake, I'm not recommending a milkshake, but a milkshake could actually be as good a recovery drink as a lot of these commercial Lucozade type ones.
Okay, well, that's interesting. Now, I'm going to wrap the show up now. Thanks. It's been really useful. I've learned an enormous amount from this, actually. And I'm going to point my brother to the replay because, like I say, his daughter's celiac.
And can I just say there, Paul, that celiac disease has a genetic component. So if a family member has celiac disease, just get yourself tested. You can either do the blood test or the gene test, because we inherit these genes, and that can predispose us to having celiac disease.
Wonderful. Now, I just want to plug your blog and Facebook page before we wrap up. Christine's written a blog about this particular thing, which I think you published today.
That's just gone out today.
Okay, and you can find Christine's blog at www.christinebailey.com.co.uk/blog, and also you can like Christine's Facebook page, and that's christinebailey.advancednutrition. So thanks very much, Christine. It's always fascinating talking to you on these things, and hopefully we'll do another one of these again very soon. So thank you very much.
Thank you.